Sam, welcome. Thank you so much for finding the time. Very excited to talk to you about your journey and about your pathway today. How are you doing? How was this term for you? How was this year going for you?
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah, it's going well enough. It's been absolute madness as ever. But yeah, at time of recording, we've just finished the first term and it's all gone well. It's all done.
Staying positive to finish the year on.
Yeah.
Sam, tell us more about yourself and sort of your journey to becoming an academic.
Yeah, so my journey is a very unique one, I think I'd say. So I'm a lab-based teaching fellow at the moment, having come through initially being the role was a lab tutor that I initially applied for and came through, and then have recently been promoted to the sort of the teaching fellow position. But yeah, mine was a very unconventional way of getting into it. So quite a few people know that I did my undergraduate here at Warwick, did the Masters of Chemistry, and graduated from that in 2017. So the first couple of years when I was on the undergrad, I was, a very average student, was very quiet. If you were doing a lecture, you'd see me just sat at the side. I'd never speak to a lecturer, that sort of thing, which I imagine is what people wouldn't really expect, given that I'm now in the position that I'm in. And really what I was more into at the time was sort of the extracurricular stuff outside of sort of the course. I remember when I was doing an open day, someone recommended that as soon as you get to university, just try everything you can. Just do all of the initial, you know, taster sessions and see what sticks. So in my first year, I did a few different sports. I did ultimate frisbee. I did something called canoe polo, which I'd never really heard of as a thing before, but I had a crack at it anyway. Did a bit of climbing and that stuck, and I still do that. And then I did all sorts of other stuff. So I had a radio show for a short bit of time. I did a bit of stand-up comedy. But one of the things that really stuck long-term was I did a bit of outreach with the Chemistry Society, ChemSoc. So that meant for the first couple of years, on the occasional Wednesday, I'd go with a few chemists to a local school. We'd bring a box of dry ice, something like that, and we'd just have a play around with it. Wow, some primary school kids, talk a bit about science. And it was just something that I really, really enjoyed and just wanted to do as much of as I could. And then in my third year, I got elected as the outreach officer for ChemSoc, so started to lead that team. So I was in charge of sort of recruiting volunteers and signing them up and arranging these school visits and going and leading on these school visits. And I was probably, in doing this, was sort of teaching in this style at least once a week. So I was just getting as much experience as I could and just doing it, not really thinking about sort of career progression or anything. Mm. I was just doing it because it was the thing that I really enjoyed doing at the time. It was a hobby. So I was doing that and was sort of coming up with new ideas for what we could do with outreach and targeting different age groups and different sort of styles of teaching, and was just having a go at anything we could think of. And then in my fourth year, I became the president of the Chemistry Society. So we're still having a hand in outreach and doing what I could. I helped organise one of the ChemSoc conferences. So that was a big task and good fun as well. And with doing stuff towards the outreach as well, we started to sort of branch out a bit and do big events like the Big Bang Fair, if you've heard of that or if listeners have heard of that. So if not, for sort of context, it's a STEM science-based event where this team, the Big Bang team, will take over some sort of a large event space. So we've had them sort of locally at the Rico Arena. They also did a few at Warwick Castle, where there'd be various stands and talks and stuff, and you'd have thousands of kids who are interested in science going around and stopping at each stall, and we'd have one for Warwick ChemSoc, and we'd do some dry ice and we'd make some slime and that sort of stuff, have a bit of a play. And during that time, I'd also, you know, before the kids turn up, what you'd immediately do is go and run around and see everyone else's stall, and you'd want to go and make slime with this other team. And there'd be quite a variety as well. So you'd have, there was one that was like a visiting zoo where they'd have a load of small animals and they'd take them to a school, and they had a little stand. So you'd go around and you'd chat to them, and you'd ask if you can hold the armadillo and you stroke their snake and stuff, you know, and ask how they got involved. So we were doing these fairly regularly. And I started to get to, you start to sort of recognize these people from similar events. You'd see them at the Rico Arena and then you'd see them at Warwick Castle. So I started to take a couple of names and thinking about what I wanted to do after my degree. I still wasn't sure, but something in teaching or something in outreach would be really good fun. Yeah. So when I graduated from the Master of Chemistry MChem in 2017, I didn't have a job secured. I didn't have anything I necessarily knew I wanted to do, but I wanted to do something in education. So I was applying for full-time jobs, but at the same time, I was working through the summer with a couple of these people that I'd spoken to at these Big Bang events. So two companies in particular that were doing sort of summer camps where it'd be sort of science-themed summer camps. You'd have the kids for a whole day and you'd do something fun and sciencey. So that was really useful. And I was doing a bit of tutoring and stuff along the side as well. So I was sort of doing some professional teaching jobs. And then still applying for this sort of a full-time position somewhere. And then this position came up at Warwick of a lab tutor. And that seemed really, really interesting to me. So I was toying with the idea before graduating of going on to a PhD. But the bit that I was really interested in was doing teaching alongside a PhD, yeah. Right? So I was like, oh, should I do a PhD just to do demonstrating in the lab? Probably not. That's quite a commitment just to do a bit of.
Yeah.
And then this position turned up that was literally just, you know, teaching in the lab. It was like, oh, that's basically what I've been looking for. So I applied and got the job and then sort of joined the team as this lab tutor role. And then I've been in that for 4 or 5 years now, having been having moved up to teaching fellow in the past year. So yeah, it's a very unconventional route. I'm one of very few teaching fellows that hasn't gone via the PhD first. And it's just been because of that sort of large amount of teaching that I did as a student that sort of allowed me to sort of progress via this very odd route.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, obviously, that's credit to your passion and skill and, you know, the experience, like I said, that you've had with teaching. I'm wondering, what was that sort of transition from working with younger people and children to sort of teaching adults and being, you know, a teacher at a university? Was that difficult? You know, what were the kind of main lessons that you were taking with you into the role in the department at the start of it?
Yeah, it was a little tricky. So I had taught like almost every age you could think of, from sort of the youngest I've taught, I think it's about 4 years old.
Wow.
And in outreach stuff, I'd taught 18-year-olds. And I'd also done a little bit of stuff with ChemSoc outside of outreach where I believe they still do them sort of student-led classes when it comes to revision time.
Yeah.
Where some of the students from older years who are confident with the topic will do a sort of a revision class for the first years or the second years on a topic they're comfortable with. So I'd done a little bit of that sort of thing. So I had a little bit of experience teaching undergrads. And really that was the thing that I probably enjoyed the most because of the added challenge to it, because the topic material is so much trickier. It's hard enough for me to get my head around it and then to try and find a way of explaining it. So I had a small amount of experience with it and it was something that I did kind of want to pursue. And then going into that full time, yeah, it was a bit of a change because I had been focusing on sort of primary level stuff throughout the summer, and then starting this role was a very big jump. And yeah, had quite a few headaches trying to think around the just getting to grips with the theory that I hadn't touched on in about 6 months, which was a welcome change from just talking about the same sort of primary level stuff, I suppose.
Yeah. Bit more exciting. I'm wondering, what are you currently working on? Give us an insight into your sort of work now.
So typical day-to-day stuff is mostly in the teaching lab. So it'll be whole day labs we tend to do. So we'll start around about 9 or 10 and finish about 4 p.m. And it'll just be sort of me with a group of 12 to 14 students guiding them through the experiments we go. And usually I'll be doing that 3 or 4 days a week. And then the other days I have my own sort of little projects on the side. So as part of my research, I do a bit of sort of lab development stuff. So I've got things going on in the back of my mind there. And I still like to keep a little bit of the outreach going. So I've usually got a couple of outreach type projects on my mind as well on these non-lab days.
Wow, that is a lot. You say little projects. I'm sure they're not so little. is that difficult to juggle these different things? Is that something that you enjoy doing and that's important for your work?
Yeah, it keeps the variety, which is nice. I suppose I don't tend to progress as much with the little projects on the side as I'd like to during term time. But then when it's our term time, I can actually focus on them a bit. Mm. So a typical summer is usually identifying a few opportunities to do some outreach, whether it's go out into schools or in non-COVID times, bring schools in and have them in the lab. And then a bit of experiment development and that sort of thing over the summer is usually the way I go about it.
Wow. It sounds like there's a lot of design, creativity and innovation in your work and in different ways as well. Could you give us an insight into, you know, what is innovation for you and how do you define it?
Yeah, so innovation for me, sort of from a teaching perspective, is all about, if you have an idea or something that you think might work, just giving it a go and seeing what happens. So it doesn't always lead somewhere particularly useful, but sometimes if I've had an idea for a new lab structure or a new experiment we can do, I think it's always worth having a go and seeing if it does actually yield positive results. And if the students do enjoy it and get on board and are more sort of engaged with it, then that's always a plus. And if the students seem completely nonplussed by all of the extra work I've gone to, then it's not ideal, but at least I know that that doesn't work.
Yeah. So is there this natural link between chemistry and innovation for you? Because I feel like every time I talk to colleagues, experimentation is this sort of common thread. Are they sort of similar? Is there a natural overlap for you? Because I feel like sometimes it's really natural and other times people are like, oh, innovation, we're not quite there yet. Particularly when you're talking to sort of students and, people who are just joining the department. Like, what's that connection for you between chemistry and innovation and, you know, experimentation?
Yeah, I certainly think so, particularly in teaching, as I said, where we're constantly sort of trying things and seeing how things go, whether it's trying a new sort of a new structure for the lab. So an example that I can give for that is last year we ran the labs a little bit different because of our delays with COVID for logistical reasons that aren't interesting enough to include on this podcast. We had to run the experiments in a slightly shorter time frame. So rather than the usual 6 hours, it was about 4 hours or something like that. So to shrink down some of the labs, I had this idea that it was, yeah, we'll just do it and see how it goes. Of if there was an experiment that had a part A and a part B, rather than doing both parts together, or each student does both parts, what if we had half a group does part A, half a group does part B? That'll take half of the time, so say just 3 hours. And then in the extra hour they've got left, we could have them work out some sort of a short presentation so they could present to the other group. And then the other group would understand the theory and the process that the first group went through. And then the group themselves who are presenting, they're then getting these extra skills on top of the practical chemistry stuff they've done. They're building on their presentation skills and these sort of soft skills that we like to promote throughout. So we did this on a couple of experiments where we knew time was going to be sort of really hard pushed. And we found that the students seemed to really enjoy it. They found it a sort of more relaxing lab. This is purely anecdotally, but they seemed to be more relaxed in that they didn't have as much work to do. And they enjoyed this idea of sort of presenting to one another, and it allowed them to be a bit more creative as well. So we've taken that idea that seemed to work really well when, you know, we were pushed for time and this is sort of a needs must situation. And then this is something that I'm feeding into the research that I'm doing at the moment. So this year we're running the experiments as we used to a couple of years ago. So in there, we've got two experiments in particular where we're sort of running them completely as we would have a couple of years ago. So students would do part A and part B. And we're gathering some data this time. So we're going to survey the students and interview them and get some hard data as to what they think about them. And then in the following year, we're going to make these tweaks again. We're going to go back to this idea of you do part A or part B, and then you present to the other group. almost in the same way that you might if you were in a research group and you're getting the other half of your research group up. So it's going to have this almost element of role play to it, as well as building on their transferable skills. So in the second year, we're going to gather the data again, do the surveys and the interviews in the same way, and then compare directly. So it's gone from this almost like needs must, we've got to try and find a way of fitting this 6-hour experiment into a 4-hour slot, to a, oh, that actually worked. Can we do a bit of research and prove that it works beyond just it felt like it went well? And if it does, then that becomes a really nice, almost a model for an experiment where we can plug that into a few different experiments throughout the year. And then that becomes almost a standard of you do some practical chemistry and then you do something transferable, whether it's presenting to another group or making a PowerPoint or making a poster or something like that. And then we're adding more variety to the classes as well.
I love that. And of course, the pandemic created so many challenges for a practice-based discipline like chemistry. And I think it's just so amazing and inspiring to see not only the ways in which the team has adapted for that challenge, but also innovated during that time. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, and there's been, we're almost getting to a point now, you know, obviously we've got Omicron coming in and who knows what's going on in the immediate future. But long term, we're almost looking at a best of both worlds situation where we're able to use the stuff that we had to create during the previous academic years where we were really hard hit and couldn't have much in lab time. So one example I can think of that for now is in the previous academic year where we had very little face-to-face teaching time, we created an awful lot of virtual resources. So using an interactive bit of software that plugs into a browser called H5P. So we got a bit of experience with that, started becoming familiar with how it was used. And when I started sort of playing with it and seeing what capabilities there were, one thing that really interested me was there was a version of it you could do that was almost like a choose your own adventure book type thing, where you could, ask a question and there's three answers and then you click one and it takes you down a certain path. So I designed this so that we could teach students how to use a piece of equipment called a rotary evaporator, right? So it would give you a picture of the rotary evaporator and three options to how do you start. So you just, do you start by turning the vacuum on, or do you start by turning the water bath on, or do you start by rotating the flask, or something like that. And then if you got the right thing, then it takes you on to the next step. If you got the wrong thing, disaster occurred and it exploded something along those lines. So this meant that the students, whilst in lockdown for, say, a whole term before they actually got into the lab, they could at least have an idea of what a rotary evaporator was, roughly the process that you'd follow, and they've done it in this more interactive way than just reading about it, or even more interactive than watching a video, right?
Yeah.
So now we're able to, we've still got that resource. So the time that I put into that, it wasn't just for the 1 year that we needed it when everything was locked down constantly. It means that now, before they have their first lab where they come in and get hands-on with a rotary evaporator, they're able to do it via this admittedly quite simplistic simulation, but still it means that they have the opportunity to have a go and make mistakes at home. And then they come in and then usually Rob will teach them, right, you've seen the interactive version online. This is what it actually looks like. So you know now what the first step is going to be. It's going to be this. And then you can get hands-on and use the actual equipment, knowing that they've got a little bit of an idea in the back of their minds as to how it works already.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It's great that we are sort of keeping these lessons and the content for going forward. I'm wondering, you know, that's quite creative idea. I'm wondering, like, how do you stay creative in your work? You know, where do you look for ideas?
That's a tricky question. Where do I look for ideas? To be honest, they tend to just come to me when I'm not really focusing on it. So whether I'm out for a run or I'll be sat in bed or something, or I have quite an, I have a lot of my ideas in the shower, as it happens, when I'm not really thinking about anything. And then I'll run out of the shower, just throw a towel on and then go and grab a notebook and write down an idea that I've had. And I'll come back to it once I'm ready to actually start work, and then think it through and see where it comes from. So I also do this on my phone. I've got a notes app on my phone that's just filled with ideas for experiments. Too many experiments for me to actually put into practice and see if they'll work. But I'll come up with an idea, oh, I wonder about that. And then I'll sort of be thinking about it for a bit and it'll just be in the back of my mind. And yeah. I suppose the structure that I spoke about earlier of, you know, being in the lab most of the time teaching and then having the occasional day to sort of do these extra projects means that these ideas are constantly ticking away at the back of my mind. So I'm constantly thinking about, oh, maybe we could add that bit to that element, or maybe this is a way we could go with that lab.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And is that the same with research?
Yeah. So where this research sort of overlaps with the experimental design, that's usually the starting point for the research. So my research has quite a naturally, a very long sort of turnaround time. So I mentioned before about how the one of the projects that I'm currently working on is this idea of testing to see if we split parts A and part B and get them to do something a bit more transferable. That's going to be a 2-year project, right? We need to do 1 year where we test to see, get a baseline, and then a second year to see if this change improves anything. So this this research approach, it always starts with having a bit of an idea. So something that, say an idea for a new experiment. And then when I've got a bit of time in the summer, normally going into the lab and playing around and seeing if it's going to work practically. And then I want to start gathering data on some sort of a baseline. And then we implement the experiment and see if that works at all. So yeah. An example of this one, next example is sort of the first bit of research I did along these lines of an experiment that's now sort of fully implemented within the lab system and now runs fairly regularly with my hands off it for now. And that's our biofuels experiment, which is quite a nice one. First year physical experiment. So the idea is that the students make some first generation biofuels, which is a really surprisingly simple system. It actually works in the same way that you would if you were making some moonshine or spirits or what have you, where we you just need something that's got a bit of sort of sugar or carbohydrate in it, leave it to ferment for a week or so, and then we distill it, get out the bioethanol, and then we test to see what the concentration of alcohol is in that bioethanol. And then that bioethanol is in essence the same sort of thing that you could put in your car with the new petrol that's 10% bioethanol, right? So it's a nice little experiment like that. I also put an added twist on it in that you may have come across, there's a few beer companies now that will sell a beer where it's got leftover bread in it. So when a supermarket has to chuck out a load of the bread that's not been sold, they'll send it to a brewery, they chuck it into the beer mash and create sort of a bread-based beer. So we're using sort of essentially gone-off bread as the starting material here, as like a renewable resource that we can then ferment, distill, and then we get this bread-based bioethanol that interestingly still smells faintly of bread once you've got it in the bioethanol form. So that's a really nice experiment that just sort of came to me as an idea when I was thinking, oh, it'd be nice to do a sort of a distillation, and then using ethanol and bioethanol would be a nice thing to touch on. And then I think the inspiration for sort of the bread side of that came from just reading an article where I saw that people were doing this brewing with a bit of with the leftover bread. But no, there's no reason why you couldn't do that for the bioethanol experiment.
Yeah.
So that was something that I then, you know, over summer went into the lab with a loaf of bread in hand and some yeast and got some funny looks from the technicians. I borrow a blender and some distillation equipment. And yeah, just played around with that. Actually, I think your co-host Matt had a hand to play in that as well. We had him working in the lab for a session, so he's partially responsible for that experiment too. And then once we got that up and running, then yeah, just implemented it in part of the carousel system we have within the teaching labs. And we've been gathering data on that for the past couple of years, seeing if students enjoy it. And that's that's sort of one of my projects that's the furthest way through in terms of sort of the research plan on it.
Yeah, I love it. I think, you know, I don't think students realize how much thinking and energy and effort actually goes into designing these experiments. So I think it's really nice to be able to take out of sort of the black box and shine a light on how much creativity and innovation actually does go on in the department and in the teaching lab in particular. Love it.
Yeah, it's very easy for, you know, certainly I would have done as a student, you just sort of, for whatever reason, you assume these experiments have always been here, right?
And yeah.
These experiments just exist, and someone opened a big old dusty book one day and they were all written in there or something. But yeah, someone has to have thought of them at some point. And now that we've got sort of the whole teaching lab team on this, which is a fairly recent thing, like I said, we've only been hired since 2017. So with the whole team focusing on it, we're able to make these tweaks and adjustments to the experiments as we see fit to improve them, or to bring in new experiments if we come up with these sort of new ideas and new approaches for the lab-based learning.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, you know, a lot of the kind of innovation comes with failure as well, and it's part of that process, isn't it? But I think perhaps within the sciences, but also, you know, sort of amongst undergraduate students and the student community widely, failure is such a difficult topic to talk about. We sort of shy away from it. I'm wondering, what is your relationship with failure? And perhaps you can share an insight into an example or a time in your life and in your career where, you know, you tried something, it failed, but you did learn something really valuable from that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've got sort of a couple of ideas of examples of ways I could answer this. So one thing that I could talk about would be, I mentioned before that I have these ideas for sort of a way of tweaking the way I'm teaching something, and then just, it's always worth having a go, and the worst case scenario is that it just doesn't work and nothing much comes of it. So a couple of years ago on one of the IT workshop courses that I teach, where I teach the first year sort of some of the key software they're going to need throughout their degree, I had this idea based off of a paper that I'd read of having the students design the mark scheme for themselves.
Mm.
And then they're assessed based off their mark scheme. So the cohort of 120 odd students was split into four workshops. And then in each workshop, I spent the whole workshop at the front of the class, trying to coordinate them sort of designing a mark scheme between them on how I was going to assess their graph drawing. And it took, you know, most of the hour long session, and quite a bit of energy and time to end up with these four different mark schemes that I was going to assess each group by. As it happened, the four mark schemes ended up being very similar as well, so there wasn't much uniqueness between each of them. And then I assessed them all sort of based on that. So each group got assessed based on the specific mark scheme that they designed. And then I asked for feedback at the end of the course, and they were completely nonplussed by the whole thing. Really didn't care about it as much at all.
I love it.
They didn't. Yeah, no one reported feeling like really engaged with it or having taken ownership of it. It was just, it was another mark scheme to them. So that was a case of, it was, I think it was certainly worth trying and worth seeing if it's something that people enjoy.
Yeah.
But the students didn't much care for it. They weren't against it. They weren't for it. It was an awful lot of effort. So that was something that I dropped and just tried to think of, well, what else can we do to make this course more interesting then? Because that's not the answer.
Yeah. But that's tough, right? So especially when you've invested so much effort, how do you sort of go past it? You know, is that something that you think happens over time as you, you know, progress through your career and grow a thicker skin? You know, what like, how you figure out like getting past that failure and not sort of, you know, let it determine what is your next move in a negative way?
Yeah, I suppose it's focusing on the positives, right? And that was one workshop in a series of workshops that went fine, but it was a lot of effort for not much reward. And the other workshops were much more positive. So in terms of sort of the short-term response after that, it was fine, that didn't work, or it didn't work brilliantly. But with the other workshops still ran fine. So I've still got a starting point, and I know that I don't necessarily want to go through the effort of that again next year. So in essence, if I consider it sort of a blank slate, I've now got what else can I do in that space instead next year? So it's a fresh piece of paper, and it's time for new ideas and more thoughts about what it is that I can do to try and improve that session.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sam, give me a sec, because the dog's woken up and trying to make noise. I'm just going to kick him out. Give me a sec.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Okay. He was behaving for the first part of the recording. Sam, I'm wondering, sort of looking into the future and the present, I guess, we need to stay positive and look for the things that are going well and we are excited about. I'm wondering, what are you excited about right now? And it could be sort of professional, academic, or personal stuff. What's keeping you excited right now?
Yeah, if we think about sort of the professional, there's a couple of things coming up that look really exciting. So I've got a relatively big outreach thing on the horizon that we're doing in January, which is part of the Channel Talent program, where it's going to be we're going to be sort of live streaming a talk to various schools, any schools that want to sign up for it. And I'm actually going to be talking about the biofuels experiment that we've spoken about today,
mm-hmm.
And sort of explaining that to A-level students. And that's going to be part of sort of a wider hour-long session where I'll explain a bit of that. We might pop into the lab itself and show off some of the kit and the distillation setup, and they can see the horrible bread goop that we make as part of that. This will be a wider thing, so it'll be done with we've got one or two undergraduates on board who are gonna discuss the experiment with me, and we've got a couple of members of staff on board as well who are going to talk a bit more about green chemistry in sort of a wider context. One thing that's it's nice to be getting back to doing a bit of outreach, albeit still doing outreach, you know, remotely or virtually. But that's always enjoyable. And then in terms of more sort of my day-to-day teaching stuff or teaching the undergraduates, we've got the second years are currently working on a project they do with me where they are creating a video project where they're going to be communicating a piece of chemistry that won a Nobel Prize and pitching it at A-level students. So that's something they're currently working on, and that's an assessment that I'm always really enjoy being involved with, and that's going to be submitted at some point in January. So that's always something to look forward to,
yeah.
See what they've done and how they've been able to, you know, use their creativity a bit more than they would in a normal assignment.
Yeah, and I mean, I from my experience in the department, I find that those are the kinds of learning experiences that really stay with students. You know, when we look at some of the feedback, particularly, you know, things like NSS at the end of their entire degree, and it's so interesting to see how that one or two things that happened, you know, years ago by the time they filled the survey out, that really stay with them. I think that it's just so amazing knowing that, you know, something that you've done made such an impact.
I mean, truth be told, not all of them enjoy the project. It is a teamwork project, so I think in some respect it depends on the sort of team you get and how well you get on with them. But some of them do really enjoy it, and it's also an opportunity to see some I suppose hidden skills, so people who don't have who have these skills that we don't really get to see until they get an opportunity to be a bit more creative.
Mm.
I remember a couple of years ago for this same assignment, there was one video that just completely blew me away, and it turned out that one of the team members, one of his hobbies was animation, and he's created this brilliant animation for explaining what is actually quite a difficult concept. And in fact, it's a concept that comes up in as part of the undergraduate course here at Warwick, right? It's an undergraduate level complexity. And he'd explained it in such an incredibly concise way, because he was able to use the visuals of this animation, that it was just really was mind-blowing. And if I was teaching on a module that had that that specific topic that's covered at Warwick, I would be tempted to say, can I borrow your video? Because that is one of the best explanations I've seen for it.
Wow. Yeah, it's great to see that talent that's, you know, beyond just the immediate discipline, isn't it? Sam, I'm wondering, what is your key learning, or perhaps, you know, sort of top piece of advice that you want to pass on to anyone listening?
Key piece of advice.
It might be a few things.
So the one piece of advice particularly for sort of new undergraduates or prospective students that I always pass on, is the same thing that was passed on to me when I was doing open days, that was just have a go at everything. And as I said, it meant that I had a crack at anything I could do, and one of those things was outreach, and that's the thing that stuck with me. And if you try everything that you possibly can, everything you think you might be interested in your first year, you'll certainly find some things that you really love and become sort of a key part of your life. So yeah, that's always been that nugget of information that I've passed on to anyone who's willing to listen to me.
I love that. What's your hope for the rest of the academic year? We still have quite a way to go. What's your hope for it?
Surviving it would be the good starting point. I think it should go well, as long as we don't have to contend with any lockdowns or anything with the coming term. Then that'd be a very good starting point. We're getting back into the lab again in January, hopefully. Starting up with some new experiments again, or slightly tweaked experiments, which are always exciting. Again, we've got a couple more that are starting up this time for the first time since we ran them remotely last year. So we're seeing how we can integrate the advantages that we found when doing stuff remotely and integrate that in with the practical stuff as well. So Fingers crossed that those any tweaks we've made along those lines go well, and that we see the benefits. And as I said before, we're sort of looking at combining the advantages of both and trying to get better experiments out of it, I suppose.
That's really cool. So I'm also wondering, you know, every year at the beginning of the academic year, we have students who, you know, are on the spectrum of excitement / anxiety for, you know, joining the labs and being back in the labs or starting the labs, depending on sort of which schools people are coming from. What would you say to sort of people who are new to the labs and are just about to go into the lab and maybe are anxious or worried or unsure if they'll do well? Is there anything you would say to them?
Again, a tricky question. I might have to edit out a bit of thinking time.
Yeah, of course. But do you get this with the team? Like, we always, you know, in Welcome Week, people are like, oh, I hate lab, or I'm too scared of it, or I've never done it before, or my school didn't have the equipment. And, you know, do you get this at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, there's always nerves at the start of the year. And that's to be expected. We think an awful lot about, I always try and put myself in sort of the student's shoes of, or not even the student's shoes, in my shoes, but more years ago than I want to think about at this point, when I was a first year, where if we get you in the lab on the first day and we say, do this experiment, you're going to have no idea what's going on, and you're going to panic and you're going to hate it.
Yeah.
Because when a student comes into the lab for the first time, it's a completely new environment. They don't even know the layout of it. They don't know who they're talking to. They're meeting their lab mates for the first time. They don't know where the bins are, just real simple things like that. So we've got all of these things going on. And if you try and ask them to do any chemistry at that point, their head might explode. So what we do instead is that we try and sort of drip feed it bit by bit. So the first day, they'll come in and they'll have a lab tour, and they'll get to meet a member of the teaching lab team, usually. Some of them unfortunately have to deal with me on that day, and then we'll give them a bit of a tour and they can see where things are, and that's a bit of a starting point. And then once we've done sort of a little initial tour and they've got an idea of almost the lay of the land, then we do a series of intro labs that are a bit more simple, focusing on a specific lab technique normally. And we start these labs of the first sort of two or three intro labs that they do. We start with an understanding of, this is mostly for you guys to start working with the person stood next to you, starting to get to know them, starting to know where things are in the lab so that you can get started, and feeling confident approaching me and asking me a question. And then once we've got a couple of days of lab experience under our belts, then we can start to think, right, so you guys now know where you're working and who you're working with and where the bins are and where your glassware is. So now we can start really thinking about this specific experiment that we're talking about today and the one technique we're really focusing on today. And then after we've done about 5 weeks of that stuff, then we start building into the main section of the lab, where we start to go, okay, you've got the skills, you know where everything is in the lab, you're comfortable talking to me just about.
Yeah.
And then we'll take a full experiment. So now we're going to do a full day experiment, and we're going to be doing something where we're trying to synthesize a product, or we're trying to prove a certain equation or get some sort of analytical information out of it. So I think we do spend an awful lot of time really considering, from the student's perspective, how do we drip feed this experience in a way so that it's not just a massive cognitive overload on the first day.
They're taken through it, which is good.
Hmm.
Is there anything else that, you know, perhaps you would have wanted to mention, but we didn't get a chance to cover? Anything else that you'd want to add?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I think we're good.
Good stuff. And so the final question is, how can our listeners connect with you and your work?
I hadn't thought about this at all. So any current students will, of course, see me more or less constantly in the lab. And then beyond that, in the various different assignments that I lead on, like the video project stuff or the IT workshop stuff in first year. I have absolutely zero online presence beyond that. face-to-face, if you happen to see me passing by. Otherwise, just in the lab generally.
Yeah, email. There's also email.
Email, yeah, Teams. They're always happy to have a chat with anyone. If anyone does want to get in touch, you send me an email. We'll arrange a time for a chat and a cup of tea. I'm always happy for a cup of tea.
that's how to get through to Sam. Oh, Sam, thank you so much. I found that conversation really interesting, and for me, not being obviously in the lab and not being a chemistry member of staff or chemistry focused member of staff, I think it's so exciting to hear about all this thinking and all this creativity that goes on in the lab, and you know that goes on to help create that really positive and exciting student experience that then allows students to, you know, explore their creativity and think about what they're learning as innovative and as new and exciting. And yeah, that's huge. So I'm feeling inspired and I feel excited to be part of a department that puts so much effort into teaching in the lab as well. So thank you so much for sharing all of the amazing examples and taking the time to speak to me today.
No, thank you, Bo. It's been good fun. And we'll have to get you in the lab at some point so you can see what's going on.
Oh, I'm not sure the safety team will be too happy about that. Hopefully at some point soon. Thanks so much, Sam.
Cheers, Bo.